It's a work I have done in collaboration with Luis Lehner, Steve Liebling, and Travis Garrett. And what I'm going to talk about is mainly contained in this paper in the archive and one that will appear next week. So we have listened to several talks about why it's important to study a stronger gravitational wave emitters that also contain an electromagnetic counterpart, basically because they give us more information about the system. And some examples are the binary neutron stars and mixed binaries that that Bruno just mentioned because of the short gamma reverse, and also the binary black holes surrounded by matter. That is what I am going to talk about. So current observations seem to indicate that in the center of the galaxies, there are supermassive black holes, which are surrounded by gas and sometimes by an accretion disk. In the case of the active galactic nuclei, the disk is magnetized and produces a magnetic field in the region of the black hole. The strength of the magnetic field can be estimated either by the observation of the jets or by analytical estimations of the Eddington magnetic field, and they both give us that the strength of the magnetic field is around 10 to the 5 Gauss. We also know that the galaxies have undergone mergers during their lifetimes, and during the merger there are a lot of things happening, but at the eventually the black holes get close enough such that the dynamics is governed by the gravitational wave emission. As the orbit shrinks, they hollow the gas in the middle, and a circumbinary disk forms that, again, if it is magnetized, will produce a magnetic field in the region of the binary black holes. So here there are two possible electromagnetic counterparts. One would be the change in the luminosity emitted by the disk, because as the black holes orbit and merge, part of the mass is lost in gravitational waves, so the potential that the disk feels is not so deep. This produces perturbations in the disk that produce shocks and change the temperature of the disk and its luminosity. And some other possible counterpart would be changing the electromagnetic fields due to the binary black hole dynamics. That is what I am going to concentrate in this talk. So in order to describe this problem properly, we need GR to describe the evolution of the space-time, because we have black holes, Maxwell equations for the evolution of the electromagnetic fields, hydrodynamics for the plasma and the disk dynamics, and we have to include also radiation processes due to the accretion and the disk dynamics. Since in order to simplify the problem, I'm going to exclude the disk from my computational domain, so the effects of the disk will be only to supply external magnetic field in the region of the black holes. Doing that basically allow me to simplify a little bit the problem. I only have to consider GR for the space-time and the Maxwell equation for the electromagnetic fields. But in order to the full MHD to describe the disk, I will only need, or I can reduce to a force-free approximation to describe the plasma surrounding the black holes. And I will neglect radiation processes because they are too complicated. Well, this is basically what we have to solve. Einstein equations without a matter term, because we are assuming, that this is a good approximation, that the black hole inertia is much bigger than any other kind of matter. So we can assume that they are like test fields. We have to solve Maxwell equations, where here we have the current that is still undefined. We have to give a prescription for the current, and that prescription for the current will come from the force-free approximation. Basically, if you have a black hole that is spinning or moving in an external magnetic field, that will induce an electric field, so that any stray charge particle will be electrostatically accelerated to high enough velocities such that they will radiate photons that will decay into electron-positron pairs. So these electron-positron pairs will be again accelerated, and this will produce a cascade process that can be averaged as a magnetosphere full of attenuous plasma, which supports charge and currents, but which have negligible inertia. Mathematically, this means basically that the Lorentz force is zero for the bulk of the plasma, and from this condition is where we define the current needed in the Maxwell equations. So the good thing of this approximation is that you don't have to evolve the fluid at all. So the fluid or the plasma is only there to provide currents and charge in the through the current function into the Maxwell equations. By using the condition of the force-free and assuming axisymmetry and stationarity, we can compute the electromagnetic energy flux that in general have this form in the case of a black hole. We can evaluate this quantity at the apparent horizon and defining some quantities like the rotation frequency of the black hole and the rotation frequency of the magnetic field lines, omega F. We obtain that if the radial component of the magnetic field is larger than zero and the rotation frequency of the magnetic field lines is below the rotation rate of the black hole, there will be an outward energy flux at the apparent horizon. And this is basically the result of Blanford and Nanjak, or what we know as the Blanford and Nanjak mechanism. So energy, the rotational energy of the black hole is extracted through the magnetic field lines. So well, we have our code that can evolve the previous equations. And the first thing to do is just to check if we can recover the Blanford-Nanjak mechanism. So we set some constant magnetic field aligned with the spin. The initial electric field is set to zero, but it will change during the evolution and it will relax to the right solution. And this is what we are finding here. This is a snapshot of the black hole. The magnetic field lines are in blue and the flux energy density is in yellow and orange at T equal 110 after the system has relaxed to the solution. And what we see that the only the magnetic field lines crossing the ergosphere are forced to rotate. And this rotation of the magnetic field lines produces the extraction of energy along the magnetic field line that is here in orange. As our code is completely general, we can also consider misalignment with the spin and the external magnetic field. So for instance, here we're considering that the spin of the black hole is misaligned 90 degrees with respect to the external magnetic field. And we see that the magnetic fields crossing the black hole are still rotating somehow, although now the shape is funnier, and there is still extraction of energy along the magnetic field lines. We can do a systematic study of the dependence of the luminosity of the black hole, the power extracted from the black hole, as a function of the spin. The points are the numerical data, and the red line is a fit. Well, it's not a fit. It's actually an analytical expectation from the simplified solution of Blanford-Nanjak that tell us that the luminosity has to go like the square of the rotation rate of the black hole. And we can see that we recover very nicely this behavior. We can also study what is the dependence with the misalignment angle. Here there are points for spin 0.1, that is in blue, and spin 0.7. And from the membrane paradigm, we can compute or estimate what would be this dependence, and it's 1 plus cosine of square of cosine of the misalignment angle. And we see that more or less we get something similar, not exactly the same. Now that we have checked our code, we can move on to the Wiener black hole case. First is just to consider the head-on case. I am plotting here again the magnetic field lines and the energy flux density, and we can see that only due to the motion of the black holes, only to the kinetic energy. The magnetic fields extract energy that propagates again along the magnetic field lines. So this can be explained as seeing as the black hole is pulling the magnetic field lines. When the magnetic field lines have some curvature, there appears a magnetic tension. It's the recovery force. And at some moment, this force is larger than the pulling of the black hole. So at the end, you have like a magnetic field line with some perturbation, and this perturbation propagates as an Arfberg wave along the magnetic field line. This is the energy that we see. When you repeat this for the orbiting case, you get that the electromagnetic energy of the pointing flux is now collimated. And we can see here several snapshots at different times. At the merger, it's interesting to notice that there is an additional isotropic energy flux, and that after the merger, we recover, and that most of the radiation has left the domain, we recover the standard Blanford and Nernst mechanism. We can interpolate the previous snapshots into a sphere located at 20 Schwarzschild radii, and what we see is the two pointing fluxes which are orbiting around with the black holes. At the merger, they smoothly make a transition from an m equal 2 mode that we have at the beginning to the m equal 0 consistent with the Blanford and Nernst solution. We can also compute the different luminosities. So here is the collimated part of the luminosity in black. The orbital or the luminosity associated to the orbital motion is in red. So the isotropic part could be estimated like the difference of these two, and you can see that is larger and very concentrated near the merger. And finally, I'm plotting here the luminosity of the single black hole for the final spin. So we see that after the merger, you go smoothly to the single spinning black hole solution, the Blanford Nernst. And just notice that there is a difference with respect to the gravitational waves, is that most of the gravitational wave energy is emitted close to the merger, while here the dependence is softer. So you have that a lot of the radiation is being emitted in many, many cycles before the merger. So just to summarize, we have evolved the Einstein equations plus Maxwell in the force-free approximation to study the effect of the binary black hole dynamics on electromagnetic fields. We have seen that there is a collimated electromagnetic energy radiation, even if the black holes are not spinning, because all the binaries I have shown here, sorry I didn't mention, were not spinning. But even then, the magnetic fields are able to extract the kinetical energy, orbital energy from the binary. So it's like a generalization, or we recover a generalization of the Blanford and Nernst mechanism. And we have also found a significant isotropic radiation at the merger that may be important for observations. But this is just the beginning. There are still a lot of things to do and to understand. Thank you very much.
Can you say something about the possibility to detect this electromagnetic radiation? I mean, in which kind of frequency, I mean, we expect to detect it? And, I mean, also as a function of the mass of the system, because as far as I understood, you are considering 10 to the 8 solar masses, while I think LISA will be more sensible, maybe 2 times 6, if I'm correct. So I would like to understand what are the possibilities to detect it.
Well, that's the difficult part, because there is a pointing flux that is in the electromagnetic part, but that energy has to be transferred somehow to the plasma and accelerate the plasma, and that will radiate in the synchrotron frequencies. The mechanism how this energy is transferred from the pointing flux to the plasma is not completely well understood. And so that's the difficult part. You can say, well, the final frequency will be close to the synchrotron, and we know what are the the luminosities, 10 to the 43, 10 to the 44 Hertz per second, but the precise mechanics is unknown for me, at least.
Yeah, I guess it's just a quick question. What were the units on the luminosity?
What is this, sorry?
The units on that luminosity plot you had in the previous slide?
The units about the, sorry. What? Yes.
On luminosity.
These are, sorry, geometrized units. So this is the collimated part. This is the part related to the orbital motion. It's all the m equal 2 mode. This is for the single, and this is the gravitational wave, but multiplied by a small factor. Yes, yeah, so, sorry. Just to fit it in the same plot.
So your black holes are not spinning?
No. These so, black, the binary black holes are not spinning.
Astronomically, it was shown that those jets are starting up and then slow down and starting up. And how do you describe those in your code? That the spin is what ignites this Blanford's magic process.
This is not exactly Blanford magic because the black holes are not spinning. What happens here is that the black holes are pulling the magnetic field lines, so the black hole move, there is a magnetic tension, and that is like a recovery force. So at some moment, this magnetic tension is larger than the pulling of the black hole, and then it tries to recover to the initial position, that is just a constant magnetic field. And then it's that perturbation that it propagates as an Arden wave. So actually, it's not extracting energy from the spin of the black hole, but from the orbital motion, or from the kinetic energy of the black hole. So in that sense, it's not Blanford magic, it's a generalization. That the magnetic fields are the are allowing to extract energy, but it's not the same mechanism.
Are there more comments or questions? Did you have one question? Thank you.